This is a Day One podcast extra, bringing you a special conversation between our host, Peter Wallace, and a preacher from our regular weekly Day One program. For more information about Day One, which brings you outstanding preachers from America's mainline Protestant churches, visit our website at dayone.org.
Welcome to the Day One Podcast Extra. This is Peter Wallace, and with me today is the Reverend Dr. Trace Haythorn, a pastor, educator, and as of the first of this year, the president of the Fund for Theological Education, headquartered in Atlanta, Georgia. Trace joined FTE from his position as director of the Vocation and Values Program at Hastings College in Hastings, Nebraska, where he also founded the Center for Servant Leadership. He was ordained in the Presbyterian Church, USA, in 1992, holds a Ph.D. in education from Syracuse University and a Master of Divinity degree from Princeton. Trace, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Peter.
As I mentioned, you were on the faculty of Hastings College and were involved in some very interesting programs there. First, you were director of the Vocation and Values Program, which seems to dovetail very nicely into what you're doing now with the Fund for Theological Education. But tell us about that program.
Absolutely. In 1992, Hastings College received a grant as a part of a larger initiative by the Lilly Endowment called Programs for the Theological Exploration of Vocation. Hastings' way of thinking about that and doing that was to develop this program that had four different elements to it. One was a focus on Christian ministry and helping young people think about and explore the possibilities not only of ordained ministry but bivocational ministry, looking very intentionally at lay ministry and its role within rural congregations. A second arm was built entirely around service and looking at service learning, paying attention to the ways that we do service, the way that service shapes character, and how service can be integrated into one's sense of vocation, that it's not something you just do at special times, but it's really a part of who you are and how you live. We also had an academic component that we built in, and then another portion that was related to the larger campus life around values. An example from the academic side was coursework that professors could develop that asked vocational questions within their particular discipline so that students were thinking about how they might live in this particular field, not necessarily just within the academy, but within whatever part of life they chose. And then on the value side of things, we developed what were called values forums on campus for folks to have a chance to talk about what often the media might portray as hot topics, but instead offering a way to engage these hot topics in greater depth, with greater understanding, from a plurality of perspectives, not just hearing from one voice saying this is what you need to think, but instead hearing that the reason these things are hot is because there's disagreement. And what are the sources of those disagreement, and how can, in that context, a liberal arts education help us grow and move forward in them?
You also led in founding the Center for Servant Leadership at the college. Why was that an important effort for you?
In many ways, it fits my own understanding of what leadership is all about. I've loved the work of Robert Greenleaf for years. I actually love a lot of leadership theory. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I noticed in my time at Hastings College is that we were pretty good at identifying young leaders. Bringing the service folks together with the leadership folks wasn't necessarily happening in an intentional way. We had a couple of things we were trying, but this seemed like the right time with the right group of young people to really create an entity on campus that would let us not only focus on what this means for the coming generation of young people, but also to draw some of our alumni in who are servant leaders, who are models, and then to draw in other friends or new folks to the college who could also demonstrate that kind of leadership. So trying to cultivate a relational sense of what this is all about, trying to build those networks so that as people graduate, move out into the world, they not only have resources but become a resource to the college in areas of service that really change communities.
I'm curious, when you were in parish work, were you particularly sensitive to the issue of cultivating a sense of Christian vocation among young people?
I think I always have been, and I'm not sure I would have used that language when I started, but I've learned it along the way. The piece that fascinates me, especially from my later academic work, in light of everything that's out there, when we look at declining numbers in denominations, when we look at the struggles of local churches, when we look at the ways that today characterizations of the church often are just this side of ridicule, the fact that there are amazing, gifted people, and now especially young people, who would want to be in a leadership role within those contexts, let me know that God is alive and well in the world. Let me know that there is hope for the church, and really give me energy in helping those young people make their way.
And now you're leading the Fund for Theological Education, and I'm wondering that it has to be a bit daunting to head up an organization which, through its scholarships in the past, enabled the ministries of some of the biggest names in the church that are so well recognized. Is it a bit daunting to you?
One of the things that fascinates me is the combination of those folks who've been fellows, big names like Frederick Buechner and Walter Brueggemann and Barbara Brown Taylor and Jim Forbes and Robert Franklin and Emily Towns and Cynthia Campbell. I'm just amazed by these names. Coming from Nebraska, Tom Osborne, these incredible leaders in our community in all sorts of ways. Some of these folks are leaders in the church, but many of them have been political leaders. Mm-hmm. Many of them have been community leaders. It's easy to get starstruck when you're around this quality and character of folks. On the other hand, it helps ground me in the daily work of FTE, recognizing that there's another one of those Frederick Buechners coming through, that there's another Emily Towns who has just received a fellowship, and we may not know who she is at this point, but she is a part of this family and being brought into an organization that will help her find her way, will be a partner with her as long as she serves, will be with her to encourage her, but also will pay attention to her in the way that she teaches us. Mm. It's a wonderful reciprocal relationship. So yes, and it's a real privilege just to be a part of such remarkable leaders.
Mm. You mentioned on our Day One program, and we've talked in the past about the Calling Congregations Initiative, but review with us again how congregations can get involved in this work.
Sure. The Calling Congregations Initiative invites congregations to be very intentional in their practice to design, whether it's a program or a daily practice or a weekly practice, to come up with a way that they can be, your particular church can be intentional about looking at the next generation of leaders. One of the stories I love is told by one of our program associates about a Nebraska farmer who begins to tell the story of thinking of farming as ministry and never having had that language before and how transformative it's been for him. And it comes with a tinge of regret, this sense of if we had talked about farming in this way, maybe there'd be more young people who stayed in it.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is exciting in terms of what that can mean for that particular community. We have folks who are in urban settings, folks who are in suburban settings. What we do is rather than say there is a one-size-fits-all for your congregation, we really help you look and listen to your context and design, craft, implement programs, ideas, practices that can attend well to what's happening in your neighborhood. In some ways, for me, it is the fruition of what Mr. Rogers has been telling us all along. It's about your neighborhood and how you can tend well there, because your neighborhood now is so connected globally that the transformation in your neighborhood has the potential to transform the world.
Trace, it seems we're seeing a shift of emphasis across denominational and even theological lines, thankfully, in that younger generations seem eager to address some of the vital needs of our world: hunger, poverty, HIV, AIDS, and so forth. What have you found in working with young people about the role of faith in public life and public service?
I think that's absolutely right. In many ways, I might identify this generation as the letter of James generation. Faith without works is dead. They so fundamentally believe that if you are not living your faith, you're really not believing, that to talk about things, to think about things is important, but only insofar as that leads you to a kind of action that makes the world more like they believe God longs for it to be.
I read something that FTE fellows are a diverse cross-section of youth seeking leadership roles and serving professions. They are boundary crossers, internationalists, justice seekers, sector connectors. Can you decode that for me? It sounds very exciting, but what makes these young people different?
I think they've seen a generation before them where, because of the volatility of the 60s and early 70s and some of the huge social crises of that age, what they would identify is that there seemed to be an entrenchment or an insularity that followed that period, that people really began to think, you know what, this is all too big, it's too out of control, I'm just going to take care of my own. And as they've looked at that, they've realized that global poverty has increased. The environmental issues are now at a crisis point that we've never seen before. There are these massive issues out there that they're taking that spirit and believing that they just have to step up and do something. Sometimes they're not sure what that something is. That's one of the places where I think FTE is an amazing resource, because we can not only help them discern their own sense of call in that, but connect them with others who care about those kinds of things. The energy and the enthusiasm that they bring and their willingness to step outside of the conventional ways of doing things, I think, is really part of what makes them so exciting. And when you look at statistics of how many of them are traveling internationally, it used to be an international mission trip was really unusual. It's reaching a point where it's almost expected. What does that mean then in the ways that we attend well to these formative processes? Is it just another consumable? Or does it become the kind of defining piece that is not just one trip that helps me write a good college essay, but instead becomes a part of a practice, a commitment, where I then devote my life to trying to be about the change that I believe God wants to happen in that place?
So in light of this new generation, where do you think church is going? We're seeing at times what seems to be both a splintering of styles and theologies, and yet in many other ways, a merging of different groups into common purposes. Where do you think we'll end up?
I tend to agree with the thought of Tom Long, wrote a book a couple of years ago about the worship wars, and that it's not a battle between traditional and contemporary. But it's, in fact, again, going back to that contextual question, how will this community worship God in ways that make sense for this community so that you can find in richly blended places richly blended practices? You can also find in a very traditional community, very traditional practice. The goal is, and part of what we try to foster in FTE, is what might that practice look like if someone were to say that it's excellent? What would outstanding practice be? How do you continue to cultivate that? Because it's also too easy to just take for granted that it will all get taken care of. We really do believe that intentionality, attention, careful discipline really shape these things in ways that the church desperately needs.
Trace, if listeners would like to have more information about the work of the Fund for Theological Education, what should they do?
I hope they'll call us. You can call us in Atlanta at 404-727-1450, or they can visit our website at www.thefund.org, T-H-E-F-U-N-D. I hope that even if folks don't contact us, that they'll take the time to particularly look at the website because of the kinds of resources that are already available there, and to read some of the stories and profiles of the young people that are out there serving. I can talk about them, but when you hear it in their words, it's so powerful. And I think in some ways it might make a few folks jealous of the wonderful job I get to do every day.
Trace Haythorne, thanks very much for visiting with us.
Thank you, Peter.